relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
It began in China, a virus now spreading throughout the world.
This is a global pandemic.
What should we do to protect ourselves and our families?
Right now, we have to start implementing both containment and mitigation.
Are we behaving rationally?
So I disagree with President Trump on many things, but I actually think the travel ban piece of his strategy has been, in many ways, warranted.
Or overreacting.
No, this is closing the barn door after the animals have already gotten out.
For the next hour, the answers to your questions. The coronavirus pandemic.
The Salem Radio News Special Report.
Your hosts are Hugh Hewitt and Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome, dear friends, to our SRN News Special Report on the coronavirus pandemic with me, Sebastian Gorka, and the doyens of Salem Talk Radio, Dennis Prager, Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher. Let's go straight to our SRN News White House correspondent, Greg Clunkston. Greg, lots of news today coming out of the White House and the administration.
Absolutely. We had the president holding what is his daily White House coronavirus task force news conference. He said he would be signing the Defense Production Act, which he did late this afternoon. He said, in case we need it. What this is allowing him, through federal law, the authority to force private industries to expand production emergency supplies, almost putting the country ready for a war footing. In fact, during the news conference today, he described himself as a wartime
president.
That's right. Earlier in the day, he said the U.S. and Canada have mutually agreed to close their border, and he also is making the same move with Mexico and stopping asylum seekers at the southern border. We learned a little bit more about what the Trump administration is doing in terms of pushing for a rescue package. It's about a $1 trillion package. Half of that would be in payouts to individual Americans. And the idea is, of course, details are still being negotiated with members of Congress, but that two separate checks would be sent out to every American household. The first in early April, the second batch would go out in the middle of May. And those amounts would depend on the size of the family and income. And then the rest of that $1 trillion package would be money for airlines, loan guarantees for businesses, and help for small businesses. The Senate late this afternoon passed the House version of the coronavirus relief bill. What's involved in that is free COVID-19 testing, 2 weeks of paid sick and family leave, more money for Medicaid, unemployment insurance, those kinds of things. The president did announce the Pentagon is deploying two Navy hospital ships, the Comfort and the Mercy. One will be going to New York Harbor, the other to the West Coast. The idea is to put non-coronavirus patients on board those 1,000-bed ships so that hospitals on land can be focused on those who are being tested positive for the coronavirus.
Thank you, Greg. Very important. I just add that from Monday, and we have an incredible interview that Hugh Hewitt did with Dr. Fauci, who is the medical professional face of the government's response that we will be sharing with you later in our special. We have the Monday announcement, record-breaking, world-breaking, 65 days from the sequencing of a vaccine to the first trial, the first volunteers being injected this Monday for a potential coronavirus. Things are moving at a great rate of knots, and we are here on the Salem Radio Network to fill you in on the latest developments and also to share with you what my colleagues, my mentors across our national platforms have been doing. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the SRN News Special Report on the coronavirus pandemic. Next, we will be handing over to Dennis Prager, then Hugh Hewitt and Mike Gallagher. Wherever you are, stay tuned to this channel.
We now return to a Salem Radio News Special Report, the coronavirus pandemic. Here are Hugh Hewitt and Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Don't miss any element of our one-hour special. It is broadcasted not only on our channels, but also YouTube Live and Facebook, and then we will post it for free on our podcast. You had the update from our White House correspondent, Greg Clarkson. Now, I am surrounded, I am the new guy on the block, by the greats, the big names in studios, so graciously. Hugh Hewitt has joined us. Mike Gallagher is on an outstation, and also Dennis Prager. Dennis, are you there?
I am here.
All right, so I have read your piece that you published in Town Hall, our friends over at townhall.com. You have, as I expected, a rather iconoclastic approach to everything that's been happening, especially in the last 7 days in America. You've put it into historical perspective. Will you share with our listeners across the nation Dennis Prager's approach to what is being reported on right now when it comes to the Wuhan coronavirus?
Well, I'm really asking questions as much as I'm doing anything. And I'm asking, have we thought through fully the remedy to the problem? And the remedy is horrific. Now, the problem could certainly be more horrific. That's the thinking. But the ruining of the Western world's economy and of the American economy, and one should understand this is not purely a financial question. You know, I'm not saying, oh, boy, what is Prager saying? Money's more important than lives. No, I'm saying lives are also important, even if they don't die. People's lives are ruined in the millions, and I mean ruined. I know a man, personally, he lost his entire year's income. I don't know what he will do. I really don't. He's a wonderful human being, a young guy. I don't think he's over 40. It's over. The thing that he had planned, the once a year retreat for people at a special resort, it's been canceled. He has nothing. The waiters, the waitresses, the small business owners. And so I'm just wondering, I'm asking, are we aware of what is happening? And then I ended it with the following, and I think it's a legitimate question, and everybody knows I am not a scaremonger. But we have entered a new realm here with closing the society because of a state of emergency. If we're doing this over the coronavirus, which has happened, it has killed a very tiny, tiny number of people on Earth, and nearly every one of them was in China, Iran, or Italy. If we are going to have this state of emergency over that, if the Democrats win the presidency and the Congress, and this is an open and fair question, why will they not declare a state of emergency over what they consider not merely a threat to a couple of million lives, but to all of mankind posed by global warming, which they claim is an existential threat. That is a threat to the existence of humanity.
Talk to us. Look, there is a not just a financial aspect, not just the mathematics. I'm going to ask you to respond to this, but there's also a spiritual aspect to everything that's happening. Are you seeing enough of the spiritual side of this contingency being addressed either by government? I know we have separation of church and state, or just thought leaders in this nation, Dennis?
Well, my Bible commentary is called the Rational Bible for a reason. My vehicle to God and religion is entirely through reason. I'm not bragging about that. That's the way God made me. I can only use reason. I'm not Mr. Spiritual. I am Mr. Rational, and reason brings me to God and religion. And I will just tell you on a rational basis, isn't it interesting that we constantly hear that, gee, it's the local church that's putting people up. It's the local church that's doing this, the local church that's doing that. For some reason, I haven't heard about the ACLU doing anything. The left has destroyed many of our institutions, but they don't replace them with anything. There's no left-wing Boy Scouts, as I have often pointed out. There's no left-wing response to the death of your local church. Your local church may have closed. So who exactly is going to be taking care of these people? People in AA, you know where they're meeting? They're meeting in churches.
Yes.
And if they don't have AA meetings, a lot of the, especially those who are newly sober, will go back to drinking or go back to drugs. But it's the church that's putting up the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So you don't even have to believe in God to understand we are poorer if religion fails in this country.
Thank you, Dennis. Follow Dennis Prager right now on Twitter at Dennis Prager, P-R-A-G-E-R. We are, I think, fortunate perhaps to have some social distancing between Dennis and Hugh, who's in studio with me right now, because I think you have a different take. I've been listening to your show, and you have been discussing a certain book. You've been discussing the World War II, following World War II, the outbreak of influenza. What is Hugh Hewitt's response to whether or not people are overdoing it?
We're not. And I appreciate Dennis very well. I've known him forever and worked with him, but he's wrong. I just think he's wrong. And that's why we have a Salem Radio Network full of different people of different points of view. I've been in Kauai, California, and back in the Beltway within 5 days. I've traveled. I've felt the fear. I understand the fear. I don't want to. I believe our job is to assure, to inform, and encourage. And that's what we want to do with this hour, assure, inform, and encourage. We do not want people, as a result of this broadcast, to underestimate the threat to their family and friends. It is real. We'll talk about it in the next segment. Dr. Fauci's interview with me yesterday, and perhaps Mike Gallagher also agrees. I just do not believe we can overreact.
What about to Dennis's point, though? If this is how we react to less than 150 people dead in America, if there is a Democrat victory in the House and the Senate, what is to stop them saying, well, climate change is going to end the world in 11 years, therefore we're going to impose martial law to fix it?
The United States Supreme Court and the rule of law and the good sense of the American people, who I believe are looking right now at what partial bit of information we received from the People's Republic of China, what little bit we know for certain out of Italy. But as you pointed out to me, Seb, before we sat down and began, we just don't know
how many are infected.
And you know as well as anyone, the White House runs on data. And without data, we have to plan for the worst. The book that I cite to everybody is The Great Influenza, John Barry's epic 2006 account of the 1918 and 1920 influenza. I do not believe journalists should be commenting on this unless they have read and accounted for the dire situation that we will confront if it iterates in a negative way. We'll talk about that whenever we play the Dr. Fauci interview. You tell me what.
We will. We will be playing in the next segment. Dennis, you have built this incredible platform with PragerU, Prager University, where you use data, you use facts, just like Hugh has said. What talk to us about the issue that he's raised with regards to the media's role in all of this. My friend John Nolte at Breitbart published a piece where he listed just the 11 most egregious lies that they have published about the president, saying states can buy their own ventilators, that there's going to be private profiteering on vaccines. What is Dennis Prager's measure so far of how the media has handled this growing crisis?
Well, let me first say that you may be 100% right. I am asking questions. I right now, and I've read and read and read, I'm not persuaded that the data suggests an apocalypse. The numbers do not add up to me as apocalyptic. If they were exponential, they would. They are not exponential. South Korea is already leveled out and even plummeted. Italy has its own unique issue with the vast numbers of Chinese there and their inferior health care to ours and the staggering number of old people. It's the oldest society in Europe.
Dennis, it's so, Hugh. May I ask you a question?
Sure.
What do you think will happen if the virus enters Los Angeles homeless community to the hospital capacity in Los Angeles?
It would be a catastrophe.
I rest my case.
No, right. I don't. Well,
but that's an if. That's a conditional.
On that basis, the homeless community, you pick the most vulnerable community possible. But so on that basis, why should people in Fresno not go to work?
Because if the Los Angeles hospital capacity is exhausted, the same phenomenon, the first time it exhausts anyone's capacity, Everyone who is sick for any other illness will not be able to receive care. That's why we have to overreact to suppress in order to maintain the capacity to care for people who have strokes.
Since I acknowledge everything you're saying, I would like you to explain to me why we didn't have this reaction 10 years ago with the swine flu.
The pathology of the swine flu was better understood, and we ought to have had this reaction when the 1918 epidemic, which is my guide, until we know the pathology. And if the pathology turns out to be less morbidity, less mortality, we change quickly.
I'm not here to be...
So you know what? I don't know if we are we out of time?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. We have a few minutes. Please, please, Dennis. Right.
So I have a very... good. So there may be an area of agreement here. I am not objecting to what we're doing right now. I am objecting to its indefinitude. I want Fauci and the president and Hugh Hewitt to give me a number at which a number of dead Americans at which we call off the quarantine. Will you, if in a month a total of 400 Americans have died, will you still want a quarantine? That demands a yes or no answer.
No, it doesn't, because it depends upon facts, not yet in evidence, Devin. Dennis, if I can put on my lawyer's hat, we need to know the mortality and morbidity rates over a period of time. And the 1918 influenza, as told in The Great Influenza by John Barry, went through 12, quote, passages, which are iterations over the course of the first summer, each one more deadly than the latter. I'll talk about it with Dr. Fauci in the next segment. We do not know which way this virus is going to go. It could return with a vengeance anywhere. We've been planning for a pandemic for 100 years. They occur on about a 100-year cycle. This looks like the big one. You know, in California, Dennis, we live for the big one that never comes. The big one has come.
Why does this look like the big one?
So let me. I we're not going to settle this between Dennis and Hugh, but that's why we're here. This is why Dennis, why Salem Radio exists, and why we're doing this special. But let me respond to Hugh, if I may. There, you said it's important to overreact. Basically, there's no such thing as overreaction. I think there is, and I think Dennis nailed it. When you have members of the cabinet talking about a 20 or 30% unemployment rate as something we should expect, lives will be destroyed based upon potentially using the worst case scenario. And I'm not sure you can justify lives being destroyed based upon the flu that took over 50 million lives. If the most appalling worst case scenario is always your guide, you don't leave house in the morning. So that's my tuppence worth. We have been talking to Dennis Prager and also our in-host co-host here, Hugh Hewitt. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Salem Radio Network's SRNU special report, the Corona Pandemic. We will keep you updated on any breaking news. In the meantime, we have an incredible interview that Hugh has done with the face, the professional medical face of our nation's response, Dr. Fauci, that we will be introducing to you in the next segment. And then the very important question of the emotional side, the fear aspect, the human aspect of all that we are witnessing here in America that has been noted by Forbes and Statista as the nation most able to deal with any pandemic of all the nations of the world. And our friend Mike Gallagher will be addressing that issue of the human factor. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't touch that dial.
We now return to a Salem Radio News special report, the coronavirus pandemic. Here are Hugh Hewitt and Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Let me give you a word of advice. Don't agree to host a show with some of the biggest names in radio and try and squeeze it into 1 hour, because you will be piggy in the middle. But we've had Dennis, we've had Hugh. He's going to introduce an incredible interview he did on Tuesday with Dr. Fauci. But I need to get Mike Gallagher on the line to react to everything he's heard and also how he's dealing with the question. I know you get incredible callers, the emotional aspect of all of this. Mike Gallagher, are you there?
I am, Seb, and you know, it's fascinating to listen to the meeting of the minds with Hugh and Dennis, and as you said, that's what makes the Salem Radio Network so special. I'm about real world, and I like to share stories, and I tend to agree with Hugh to the extent that real world stuff is happening. We can be in resistance mode. We can say it shouldn't be happening. I have four adult sons. My oldest son today lost his job. My second oldest son is on the verge of losing his job. Very dear friend in New York City who has a 42-year-old coworker in perfect health and was diagnosed a week or so ago and is now in the hospital with pneumonia in both of his lungs. So this is the kind of stuff that is happening. Of course, Dennis is looking at it from a 35,000-foot view and what kind of catastrophe are we facing, but we either can understand and appreciate the knowledge of Dr. Fauci, and I can't wait to listen again to Hugh's conversation. I spoke to him, to Dr. Fauci as well today, interviewed him on my show, and Dr. Fauci was about not saying you can't overreact too much because if we don't stop this, we do need to look at worst case scenarios as have been projected, and we don't want a million and a half or more deaths if simply staying away from one another for a few weeks is doable. So listen, I love the spirit of this country and the fact that we are communing with each other, either through social media or on the radio. But we've got to recognize the enormity of this. And again, Hugh has been on this for months and got a lot of flack for it. Hugh, I give you lots of credit. We pull each other's leg a lot, but you've been on the forefront of warning the country about what this could possibly become. And I think we need to be ready for an awful lot of pain economically, emotionally, Seb, as you put it, the pain that people are feeling, the fear. Elderly people who are alone, people who are utterly isolated, we're in for a rough haul. We're going to beat this thing, but it's going to take some time, guys.
Those are incredible stories, Mike. What are you telling to those people that are calling up or those family members that are really already just a couple of weeks in really feeling it? What is your message to them?
Well, we can't forget the spiritual aspect of this country where we are a Judeo-Christian nation. We have to have faith. We have to have perseverance. But all of us have to do our part. I mean, for people watching us, I'm in my kitchen right now. I'm working from home. Radio technology allows all of us to work from home, and everybody has to make that decision. There, of course, we have an essential service to provide as a radio network and an online platform. But where people can work from home, I agree with Dr. Fauci, who told me this morning they should. If you can't, I understand it, and my heart goes out to everybody who's suffering. And it's the great if in listening to that sort of debate between Dennis and Hugh. And you were moderating beautifully, Seb. You said it's the great if. It's the unknown. We should know what we don't know. And we don't want to be facing a ton of fatalities. And I would argue that a million and a half deaths is something that should get all of our attention. And the weird thing about this, and I asked Dr. Fauci this, people are walking around saying, well, I'm okay. I'm asymptomatic. Doesn't mean anything. If Dr. Fauci and the experts are correct, you could be asymptomatic and have this and give it to somebody who gives it to somebody who winds up reaching somebody's mother or grandmother or loved one, husband, wife. So I'm trying to be reassuring. I believe in clarity. I believe in calm. I believe in prayerfulness, but I also believe we have to be realistic.
So one of the things that I'd like to reassure everybody of as an individual who has worked with candidate Trump and then in the White House for Donald Trump as president, working as his strategist, one of the remarkable things is we have a man in commander-in-chief who's lived in the real world, has had to solve pragmatic problems for 50 years. And the other thing that isn't appreciated and will not be recognized by his detractors, especially the media, is his capacity to learn incredibly quickly. I saw this in the White House, when he's presented with a new problem, you give him the information, he can turn on a dime. You saw this in the last 6 days. The first press conference, vice the press conference he gave yesterday, a huge, huge difference in all of this. As he's handing off to the experts, one of the key individuals, as Mike mentioned, is, of course, Dr. Fauci. Hugh, you had the good doctor on your show. Talk to us a little bit about this interview before we play an extract of that interview.
The entire interview, Seb, and thank you for asking, and Mike did a great one today. The entire interview was premised on my familiarity with public health, having 17 years on a public health commission in California, and with epidemiology behind the great influenza. So I dove deep into worst case, and that's the part of the interview I'd like us to play.
Okay, well, let's see what we have available. We have a segment of Hugh's interview. Chad, play cut.
The big unanswered question, because I don't know that many members of the White House press corps have actually read The Great Influenza, is that between its appearance in Kansas in the spring of 1918 and its devastating second wave, it went through 12 iterations, according to John Barry's book, and the second and third and fourth, they got deadlier. The hardest question for me to answer is, during the summer when the virus appears to disappear, will it be iterating into a more deadly virus? Is there any science to tell us if we're getting crowd immunity or if it's going to come back in a more virulent form?
You know, we do not know. When we suppressed the SARS coronavirus, it went away and never came back. We are hoping that if we can suppress this by mitigation and by containment over the next few months, that when we get into the deep summer, that it will disappear. If it doesn't and come back, hopefully that will give us more breathing room to develop therapies as well as a vaccine. But the straight, but the direct answer to your question is, we do not know if it will come back and how it will come back. It's a possibility, but we just need to be prepared for it.
I was cheered yesterday by the record-setting initiation of a trial on a vaccine. I am curious if there is other good news on interventions for those who are suffering from virus pneumonia and related, there are some pretty awful related maladies. Are there any new interventions that have crossed your screen?
Oh, there are several that are in clinical trial. They have not yet been proven to be effective, but there are a number of interventions, what we call therapies, direct antiviral therapies, that are being tested in China, and some that are even being tested here in the United States.
Now, my last technical question has to do with the CDC and the testing breakdown. Was that because of regulatory capture? Was that because the CDC always prefers its own work? Was that simply because I think what the president was saying yesterday is, while we've confronted Ebola and H1N1, we've never confronted as fast a moving virus as this one before that is so elusive to diagnose. What happened on the testing development?
You know, it was a complicated series of multiple things that conflated that just, you know, went the wrong way. One of them was a technical glitch that slowed things down in the beginning. Nobody's fault. There wasn't any bad guys there. It just happened. And then when the CDC realized and the FDA, that both the system itself as it was set up, which served certain circumstances very well, was not well suited to the kind of broad testing that we needed the private sector to get involved in. The regulatory constraints, which under certain circumstances are helpful and protective of the American people, were not suited to the emergence of this particular outbreak. So there was a confluence of a bunch of things. I believe now that the CDC and the FDA and the department, that we've got it right now because we're handing much of it over to the private sector, the heavy hitter companies that do this for a living. And I think what you're going to be seeing looking forward is a major, major improvement in the availability of testing.
Was the glitch or anything about the production of the tests President Trump's fault? Or actually, let me put it more broadly, would every president have run into the same problem?
Oh, absolutely. This has nothing to do with anybody's fault, certainly not the president's fault.
And that brings me to my last question. What is it like working with the president? You've worked with a lot of presidents. And by the way, I got two questions. I lied. I have two more questions. What's it like to work with the president?
It's an interesting experience. You know, each president has their own unique character. He's somebody who is, you know, very active, a lot of things going on, very direct, very decisive.
Very last question. The Pope took a walk, Dr.
Right.
Fauci. What did you mean? He's 83 years old. He's out walking around. There's surface infection, right? Is that what the Pope should be doing?
Well, you know, the Pope is a very special person. He has things and responsibilities to his flock, if you want to call it that, that sometimes supersede things of self-protection.
So you're not, well, okay, Tony Fauci, I'm not going to ask you to criticize the Pope. There were thousands of college kids in the water in Florida yesterday. I'm sure you saw the picture. What's your message to them?
Yeah, I would tell them, please, please, even though you yourself feel invulnerable, being in crowds, getting infected, you may inadvertently bring the infection to a vulnerable person who might be your father, your grandfather, your sick uncle. Take care. We all have to be in this together. This is a, you know, all of country pulling together to get through this.
Should they go home?
The kids, yeah. They should just get out of crowds. That's what they should do.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, thank you. You are wonderful.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You are listening to the Salem Radio Network's news special report on the coronavirus pandemic with me, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, and Greg Cluxton, our White House correspondent. Hugh, is there anything else you'd like to add from that interview?
That is what I consider to be ideal journalism. Assure, we will be here keeping doing it. Inform, teach about the iterations, encourage, there are new interventions. Dr. Fauci is wonderful. It drove the mainstream media nuts. I was the subject of attack because Dr. Fauci exonerated the president.
Of course.
And I honestly think they have not made the shift from the Trump lens, the red-blue lens, which colored everything, to a crisis lens.
Yes.
We did it instantly on 9/11. They cannot do it.
Mike, is there anything you'd like to share from your discussion with Dr. Fauci?
I would indeed. I mentioned to Dr. Fauci that he needs to take care of himself as well.
Yes.
I joked that none of us are any are spring chicks. He's 79 years old. And I asked him on a personal note this morning if he's taking care of himself. He said, Mike, I wish I could say I was getting rest. I mean, he's not. These guys are working round the clock. And boy, I'm just praying for him because we need him. As Hugh said, he's a gem. He's so widely respected from people on both sides of the aisle. And all of our leaders and all of our experts and all of the people in the trenches have got to also try to take care of themselves as well. Contrary to the Bill de Blasio excuse of still going to the gym, and he said, well, I have to stay healthy because I have decisions to make for the people of New York. That may be a stretch, but I don't think you'd hear Dr. Fauci say something like that, but he is burning the candle at both ends. And again, not a young man, but obviously in great shape, and we pray for him.
We do indeed, and we are blessed to have people like Dr. Fauci, Ambassador Dr. Birx on the team, and also Mike Pence. I couldn't think of a better person to be at the forefront of our nation's response and helping the president in our coronavirus emergency at the moment. Please remember, things are moving very rapidly in a good direction as well. 21 states now have the capacity in certain areas to do mobile testing, swabs. You don't even get out of your vehicle. The medical professional will swab you and they will do a test. We have on Monday this week, the first trial vaccine has been injected into 40 brave volunteers. Thank you. It is essential now more than ever to stick to the facts. Listen to Salem Radio. Listen to the trusted sources that you've trusted for years. And then when it comes to websites, you've got to get the real information. Whitehouse.gov, CDC.gov. Even if you go to YouTube, I don't know if they're getting it for free or if they're paying, but as soon as you go onto YouTube, you will see a banner, latest updates from the CDC. They are less than 2 minutes long. Watch those updates because they are priceless. I'm going to stick with that public service announcement spirit. Stay with us, Mike, because we have time in this segment. But I would like all of our listeners, if you haven't heard the president's coronavirus guidelines for our nation, it is time to pay attention to what all of us in all age categories need to listen to. This is subtitled 15 Days to Slow the Spread. Number one, listen to and follow the directions of your state and local authorities. Two, if you feel sick, stay home. Do not go to work and contact your medical provider. Three, if your children are sick, keep them at home. Do not send them to school. Contact your medical provider. Four, if someone in your household has tested positive for the coronavirus, keep the entire household at home. Do not go to work. Do not go to school. Contact your medical provider. 5. If you are an older person, stay home and away from others. 6. If you are a person with a serious underlying health condition that can put you at an increased risk, this includes conditions that impair your lung or heart function or that weaken your immune system, stay home and away from other people. 7. Even if you are young or otherwise healthy, you are at risk and your activities can increase the risk for others. It is critical that you do your part to stop the spread of the coronavirus. This includes working or engaging in schooling from home whenever possible. If you work in a critical infrastructure industry as defined by the Department of Homeland Security, such as healthcare services and pharmaceutical and food supply, you have a special responsibility to maintain your normal work schedule. You and your employers should follow CDC guidance to protect your health at work. Avoid social gatherings in groups of more than 10 people. Avoid eating or drinking in bars, restaurants, and food courts. Use the drive-thru, pickup, or delivery options. Please avoid discretionary travel, shopping trips, and social visits. Very important, do not visit nursing homes or retirement or long-term care facilities unless to provide critical assistance. And lastly, just practice good hygiene. Wash your hands, especially after touching any frequently used item or surface. Avoid touching your face. Sneeze or cough into a tissue or inside the crook of your elbow. And lastly, disinfect frequently used items and services as much as possible. Hugh, are you finding with your listeners, people you talk to, are people aware of the things they should be doing, or are we still in a learning curve?
I think our generation, I'm 64, so I'm talking about the 60 and above generation, is very, very informed because we watch TV.
Right.
I do not believe young people are with it yet. I know that Dr. Birx has been trying to get their attention and say to them, please, I had a friend tell me her 19-year-old went out clubbing this weekend and was surprised that only one of 5 floors inside the D.C. club was occupied. And frankly, I know what it means to a club operator not to. I understand if a restaurant was scheduled to open this week for a year, they work to get the building permit for a year. Or Mike Gallagher, you're a man of the stage. Can you imagine someone who had their first role, someone who was going to get to the big Broadway lights, and they don't get to do it. But this is called suppression, and it has to happen because of iteration. And, Mike, you do live in the theater world. I'm just curious. It must be heartbreaking for some of the performers.
Oh, it's not only heartbreaking but fearful because they don't get paid when they don't work. All of Broadway's been canceled. All the national tours have been canceled. Everything has been canceled in the theatrical world, and these are people, crew, orchestra, you know, stagehands, actors, actresses, who live paycheck to paycheck in many cases, and they're not going to get paid, and it could be for a long time. So there's a lot of apprehension. Of course, that's a very tight-knit community. They're hanging on to each other. I will tell you that COVID has struck members of the Broadway community, and there are indeed actors and actresses who have tested positive. There are entire companies on Broadway that are self-quarantining. So it's very real and heartbreaking and scary. A lot of the shows that have closed will not open again. And as you said, Hugh, you know it. You know that world as a fan, and I'm a fan and an investor in Broadway. I mean, these are people that put their whole life savings into shows that will never again see the light of day.
I wanted to add, Seb, if I could, Dennis Prager mentioned earlier, and it occurred. I saw CNN, a good word for CNN, run a segment on this yesterday that. People who are in recovery, especially people who have just emerged from rehab, are without meetings. And CNN did and I talked about this with Governor DeWine this morning, WeConnectRecovery.com. WeConnectRecovery.com. They've gone online to support those people who are in recovery. And I think probably the stress level in the country is as high as 9/11. As high.
Agreed. This is the Salem Radio Network's news special report on the coronavirus pandemic. We are talking to Mike Gallagher and Hugh Hewitt on Twitter, Radio Talker Mike and Hugh Hewitt. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This will be a weekly endeavor, at least every Wednesday. Follow our Twitter feeds for the information you need and also the spiritual fuel that is perhaps as important as everything else. And on top of that, there are a lot of people who wish to make political and financial profit from what is, in fact, a tragedy for people who are suffering, not just physically, but economically. And please, as a result, stick to reliable sources of information, at least CDC.gov and also WhiteHouse.gov. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Salem Radio Network. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay on this dial.
We now return to a Salem Radio News special report, the coronavirus pandemic. Here are Hugh Hewitt and Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Phase two has been passed by the Senate as an aid package to those suffering as a result of the coronavirus. The phase one vaccine is already under testing, and we have 21 states that have established mobile testing facilities as well. That is the big news in our nation's response to the coronavirus. I am here with Hugh Hewitt and Mike Gallagher. Closing thoughts. Mike, are you still there?
I am. Sure, Seb. I mean, I was in the Empire State Building the morning of 9/11, and I remember as a New Yorker what it felt like afterwards. There was a unifying spirit. I believe we're getting there. I think a lot of the polarization is starting to dissipate. It's fading away. We're in this together as Americans. We're going to get through this. All of us, all of our shows are playing a bit of a different role, but we're in the same mindset of informing, enlightening, clarity, and calm. And so it's an honor to be on the team with you guys. It's a blessing to be able to do this for a living, and just know that we're gonna lift each other up, and we're all going to get through this as Americans. It's the greatest country in the world.
Hugh Hewitt.
It is not 2008. I've been doing my show for 20 years, and Mike is right. It's 9/11. I did 8 hours live. I was on the air when the airplanes hit the building. I saw them come down. I've never listened to the tapes. This is where radio, because of the advantage of time, is able to not only talk with our audience, but the Salem hosts in particular, go about doing redemptive radio and bring on Dr. Fauci and bring on all sorts of people. This is where we assure, inform, and encourage. And if we can help get over, if we can flatten the cruelty curve as well as the virus curve, if we can flatten the partisanship curve as well as the virus curve, I will think we are doing our job, the job for which Salem was created many years ago. And all of our affiliates, we thank them for trusting us to get their stations through this and the audiences that we serve and our advertisers through this.
Well, it's an honor not only to be on this platform at this time when our nation needs people like you. Salem is different. It is mission-oriented. That's why we're here. Radio is different as well. It's about friends. It's about relationships of trust and authenticity, and that's exactly what we are doing. So all of you, Dennis, Greg, Mike, and Hugh, we will continue to do what we do every single day. Stay tuned to these programs on the Salem Radio Network, because we are living, as Newt Gingrich said on my show today, usually life, we live in political times, but sometimes you sense when history is your environment. And now we are living in history. Mike is right. We are the greatest nation on God's earth. We were the most powerful, the richest when it began. When we come out of the other end of it, we still will be the greatest, the richest, and the most powerful. And I will sign off this special as I sign off my show every single day. To all of you Salem loyal listeners out there, it's a very simple message. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Never give up. Never give in, and always stay frosty. Thank you for being with us.